And now let us all give a round of applause for Reverend Tom Witt.
Thank you, Mindy. Thank you. Morning, everyone. Happy Sunday to you. Well, it looks like we're going to need a little rain for a change today, huh? Following is a true story written by Douglas Adams entitled Cookies. He'd gone to catch a train, and this is back in 1976 in Cambridge, UK. And he arrived early at the station, so he purchased for himself a newspaper, a cup of coffee, and a packet of cookies. So he found a table to sit at, and he, if you can imagine the table, and so he plunks down his newspaper, his cookies, and his coffee. Sits down, begins to read, and across from him is kind of a normal looking gentleman, nicely dressed, carrying a briefcase. And then something rather unthinkable happened. That gentleman reaches over, picks up the cookies, opens them up, takes one, and eats it. And the author of this story says, this was really hard because, he says, we Englishmen aren't prepared for something like this, somebody stealing a cookie. And he did what any reasonable Englishman would do. He ignored it. So he started reading his paper and doing the crossword. He says, wait a minute, I'm going to have at it here. And he reaches over into the cookies, takes one, and eats it with no comment from the gentleman. He figured, well, that'll settle that. A few moments later, the gentleman reaches in, takes another cookie, and eats it. He says, you know, having not any said anything the first time, it really seemed odd to say something now, like, you know, excuse me, I can't help but notice that you... So once again, he just ignored it. They went through the entire package of cookies that way. By the entire package of cookies, there were 8 of them, and so they alternated turns eating cookies. Ultimately, when the cookies were gone, the gentleman got up, left the area, and Douglas's train pulled into the station. He finished his coffee, picked up his newspaper, and under the newspaper was his package of cookies. Douglas says, the thing I particularly like about this story is the sensation that somewhere in England there has been wandering around for the last 25 years another normal kind of guy with the exact same story, except he doesn't know the punchline. And to me, this story tells me the next time we're convinced that we know everything, that we are right, make sure to check under the newspaper first. We might just be missing something important. I'll return to that story in a bit. Henry David Thoreau said, if one advances confidently in the direction of their dreams and endeavors to live the life which one has imagined, they will meet with a success unexpected in common hours. Pretty much what Unity says. William Hutchinson Murray, who climbed Mount Everest, said, until one is committed, there is hesitancy, the chance to draw back. Always ineffectiveness, he says. The moment one definitely commits oneself, then providence moves too. A whole stream of events from that decision issue forth, raising in one's favor all manner of unforeseen incidents. You know, something happens you wouldn't think would happen. You meet somebody that you never would have thought you'd met. An opportunity befalls us. things that we never could have dreamt would come our way. And like I say, I think these comments about kind of visioning and committing are just consistent with what we teach in Unity. And I've always thought, well, you leave it to the universe, leave it to Spirit. But we have a part in this too. See, Murray and Thoreau, they knew these things would occur, but I don't think they totally understood why. Because right now at this moment, each of you have millions of bits of information flooding into your hearing, into your eyes, into your five senses. But you have a system within your brain called a reticular activating system that filters out the things we don't need to focus on right now. So you're getting information on the color of the sanctuary, the screen, every single brick, the candles, the palms. Hopefully, you're focusing or eliminating those things and focusing on your speaker, I hope. The RAS, or reticular activating system, allows you to focus on what you value. And it supports you then when you set your goals, when you make that commitment that Murray referred to, or that vision that Thoreau referred to. And it accepts anything in support of your goals. It kind of rationalizes that you're on the right path. And it activates our subconscious to create solutions for getting goals. In other words, things that are hidden in our subconscious that we don't know consciously that are there will issue forth. A little bit like if I said, name all the songs that you know the words to. You know, maybe you'd come up with 100 or something. But yet, as you heard more and more of the songs, you'd say, oh yeah, I know those too. Maybe there's thousands of songs we know the words to. They're hidden in our subconscious. Well, the RAS system, when we set our minds on something, will pull those things from our subconscious and support us in reaching our goals. Kind of confirms what Thoreau and Murray said. Has anyone here ever owned one of those, I'm going to date myself here, porcelain piggy banks that had the slot in the top? And it's the kind where you had the slot in the top, and then that same slot is used to extract the coins. And you had to turn it upside down and shake it like crazy to see what coins would fall out. At least that's what I remember back in the day. Anybody else remember one of those? Oh, man. Okay, cool. And as you shake it, you know there's more in there than you can realize because you hear it moving around. You hear the noise it makes. My talk today is titled Live It, Really Live It, and it's based on my book of the same title. And I'd like to read to you a first little paragraph of the dedication of this my book. I dedicate this book to everyone who knows there's more to life than they have experienced, but are reluctant to reach beyond what they know. See, I believe that if we're reluctant to shake things up, I'm concerned that we'll die with too many of our coins left within us. And when we shake up our lives, you know, we don't know how our relationships will change. Our means of earning a living may take a turn. And we'll never know that we might begin to appreciate some of the little things we never noticed before. We won't know until we reach beyond what we know, and our RAS, the reticular activation system, will support us in that. I think there's a good example of that in the Gospel of John. Chapter 5, it talks about, now in Jerusalem by the sheep gate there is a pool called in Hebrew Bethzatha, which has five porticos, five openings around it. I kind of think that metaphorically represents the five senses. In these porticos lay many invalids, blind, lame, and paralyzed. One man who had been ill there for 38 years Now, you know, in the Bible, when it says 38 years, it doesn't mean 36, 37, 38. It just means a really long time. Close to 40, close to the time of completion. There was a man who had been ill for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and knew he had been there a long time, Jesus says to this guy, "Do you want to be made well?" The sick man answered him, "Sir, I have no one to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up." See, the idea is when the angels come in and stir up the water, if you can get in there while it's still stirred up, you'll be healed. But see, he relied more on his excuses and his history than his ability to be made well. He says, "Sir, I have no one to put me into the pool, and when the water is stirred up and while I am making my way, someone else steps down ahead of me." He's kind of whining. I think, ever whine and make excuses? Blame it on someone else? I have. Jesus said to him, "Stand up, take up your mat, and walk." And I think Jesus, in this parable and many others, represents the Christ in us. That calling that is for health, that is calling that is for wellness, our natural state. Jesus says, "Oh, come on, man, stand up, take up your mat, and walk." At once the man was made well, and he took up his mat and began to walk. Kind of like Thoreau and Hutchinson and Murray said. Man, you see it, and it's going to happen. And your brain will help you make it happen. Because this man was reluctant to reach beyond what he knew. As I said in my first paragraph of my dedication, I dedicate this book to those of us like him. And what I would say is, everyone's not totally like that. There's just places in my life where sometimes I'm reluctant to reach beyond what I know. This man had known sickness. What he needed was to listen to his inner voice. His part that says, "Okay, kind of, we're done with this, aren't we?" The Christ within. The thinker that uses our brain. Ernest Holmes, the founder of religious science, talks a lot about the thinker. He says, we don't use our brain. The thinker uses our brain. Which is what Jesus represents in this parable. And he picked up his mat and he walked. So I dedicate this book to everyone who knows there's more to life than they have experienced but are reluctant to reach beyond what they know. Is there anywhere in your life where you're reluctant to reach beyond what you know? There is for me. To everyone who is willing to pick up their mat and walk. So here's what I'm suggesting for all of us. Sometime this week, leave the familiar that limits you, and somewhere in your life, pick up your mat and walk. Just move to a new place somewhere in your life. Try something new. I also say I dedicate this book to anyone who has befriended fear more than they have befriended ability. I don't know about anybody else who's written a book, but I befriended fear a lot more than I did ability in the 2 years it took me to write this sucker. And I wanted to self-publish, but when I read on how you need to do it, I knew there were too many reasons for me to stop and pause, so I had to pay someone to publish it for me. So I asked for help. And maybe I should have said that we befriended excuses instead of competence, or doubt instead of talent, or history instead of possibilities. Whatever keeps me stuck, I don't know about you. But I can use all those things to kind of just stay where I am in my little comfort zone that sometimes isn't so darn comfortable. But it's what I know. Eleanor Roosevelt said, "Do one thing every day that scares you." What can you do today that scares you? What can I do today that scares me? Where can I be vulnerable? Where can you be vulnerable? Where can we show that we're brave? Where can we show that we have courage? Now, I'm not talking about, pardon me, doing anything dangerous. I'm talking about doing something risky, something that feels risky, something out of my comfort zone, something beyond the green edge of what I'm, my knowing. Jack Canfield, in his book, The Success Principle, says, was preparing to go on a morning talk show in Dallas. And he asked the station's makeup artist about her long-term goals. She said she'd always thought about opening her own beauty salon. So he said, well, what are you doing to make that happen? And she said, nothing. She said, nothing. She says, I don't know how to do it. Canfield suggested she take a salon owner to lunch and ask that salon owner, well, how did you start? Good idea. She says, you can do that? Can you see how we can use our mind to keep us, our mind is like the key to unlock us in the light, and it can also be the key to kind of keep us shut down safely in our comfort zone. You can do that, the makeup artist exclaimed. Yeah, you can do that. You just have to shake that piggy bank and let the possibilities fall out. And it may make some noise as you do so. See, she needed to look under the newspaper because she was missing a little packet of cookies that was there just waiting for her to grab. I believe she had to let go of fear, trust her ability, her talent, and her innate power. And lastly, I dedicate this book to all who are ready to aim high and rocket into the unknown. Someone once said, jump high, brother. Jump so high that if you fall, they don't talk about how far you fell, they talk about how high you jumped. Aim high. You want to jump as high as you can and reach as far as you can. I can almost see Jesus now walking on the along the Sea of Galilee in the Gospel of Matthew, where it says he saw two brothers, Simon, who was called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. So that's what they knew. They knew how to fish. And he said to them, follow me, and I will make you fish for people. Follow me, in other words, and I'll make you reach as far as you can possibly reach. I dedicate this book to all of you who are willing to reach far. I mean really far. So far that you hear your clothes stretch a little bit or your back tighten up or something. Armenian-Russian author Vera Nazarian says, when you reach for the stars, and that's what I'm asking you to do, reach for the stars. You are reaching for the farthest thing out there. And your brain will help you reach for it and find reasons why you ought to reach for it. See, when you give your brain, the reticular activating system, a $10,000 problem, it will create for you a $10,000 solution. So why not give it $1 million problem and let it give you $1 million solution? Because it's going to help you do that. Those who want to aim high and reach far, that's who this book is intended for. Really reaching out there. Nazarian, though, goes on to say, when you reach deep into yourself, it is the same thing, but in the opposite direction. Reach into the depths of your authenticity, of who you are. Reach into the depths of your Christ spirit. Yeah. Reach into that place of complete self-differentiation, where you and I make our decisions. Not our culture, not our history, not family systems, but reach so deeply into our Christ consciousness that you and I decide where we're going. You will never, ever go wrong doing that. Oh, you may have to change course, and you may run into some challenges, and you will know just what to do if that occurs. And she closes by saying, if you reach in both directions, as far as you can out there and as deeply as we can in here. She says, you will have spanned the universe. I think you will have spanned the kingdom of God, the kingdom of heaven. In the Gospel of Luke, it says, once Jesus was asked by the Pharisees when the kingdom of God was coming. And he answered, the kingdom of God is not coming with things that can be observed, nor will they say, look, here it is or there it is, for in fact the kingdom of God is among you. This was contrary to the beliefs that God was going to come in fire and fury. No, he says, it's right here, right now. This is the kingdom of heaven you're living in. You want to know heaven on earth? Reach as far as you can in both directions, out there and in here. And your brain will do everything it can to see that you reach far and deep. And whatever you conceive and believe, you will achieve. Your brain will lift up that newspaper and find another packet of cookies, just especially for you. So in closing, I said I dedicate this book to all who are ready to aim high and rocket into the unknown. Rockets need guidance. I hope you find it in this book, too. Namaste. Thank you.